to order at 3:39. For transparency, the meetings will be recorded. All Senate meetings will be recorded, and the audio will subsequently be posted to the Senate's webpage. So thank you, everyone, for attending. We're living in what will unfortunately become normal times for us. So somehow we're going to have to adapt to this change. But I do appreciate your taking time out to attend the Senate meeting. So thank you for that, and I hope everyone is well. I'd like to start off today's meeting with an approval of the agenda. But before we make an approval, make a motion, there are two amendments. 6A, we have to include a 6A in the nominations committee election. There are three open seats. And then 7A, we have to remove the name of Stephen Harris, and we'll just have a open UFS petition for the university faculty Senate seat. So we just have to delete Stephen Harris, and we may have one or two other nominations. So with those changes, can someone make a motion to approve the agenda dated September 10th, 2020?
I make a motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay. Aye.
Any opposed? Aye. Abstention. Okay, so moved. Thank you. I will share my screen. Someone requested access to the report, so I'm going to share my screen. If I can find out which one it is, I never remember which one. I think it's this one. And then it's back to you. Okay. I know it's a little small. Should I try to enlarge it?
No, it enlarges, Simone.
Okay. So with the next item, approval of the academic Senate meeting minutes dated May 14th. Motion to approve.
I make a motion.
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Abstentions. Thank you. So moved. And getting to item number three under announcements, before we open it to official announcements, I am going to stop share and give the floor to our guest speaker, President Frank Wu, who officially started with us July 1, 2020, and welcome to Queens College.
It's great to be here. Thank you. Thank you for applauding. That's very kind of you. Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm going to give you a state of the college. I'm happy to take questions. I have the opportunity to speak to the PMB meeting. I know some of you are part of that body as well, but many of you are not. So this will cover some material that perhaps you've heard, but it is such a dynamic environment. Everything is fast changing. I think you will find something new in what I have to say, and I want to be as substantive as possible. So I'll leave ample time for questions. I'm going to talk a little bit about thinking beyond the pandemic, about our enrollment, about our reopening plans, about the budget, outreach, and then strategic planning. Okay, so I'm just so excited to be part of the Queens College family. Many of you have heard me say this is a dream job. It is not a stepping stone someplace else. I did not intend to be a college president. I wanted to be the Queens College president. That's because of the diversity of the borough that we serve and because we've remained true to a mission. Higher education is the engine of the American dream, specifically accessible, affordable, quality public higher education. As I've met people, it's humbling. Everyone, students, faculty, alumni, staff, are committed to this mission, especially now during this moment of pandemic and unprecedented challenge. I want to thank Simone Yearwood, who I've gotten to know, and all of you. I look forward to working with the Senate and involving the Senate Shared governance is an important part of every academic institution, something that I've believed in, whether I've been a trustee, an administrator, or a faculty member. Let me start with a little bit about thinking beyond the pandemic. And I want to acknowledge, I think we have to, for someone entrusted with a leadership role, that this is a crisis. That's not rhetoric. It's not hyperbole. Nobody has seen anything like this ever. Even if you were around New York City, even if you were in the CUNY system in the 1970s, when the last huge challenge was faced, this is more severe in statistic terms. Yet institutions, just like individuals, have to show resilience and have to adapt. So even as we think about all the protocols and do what we have to get through the next few days, weeks, and months, I'm convinced there's an opportunity for us here. Let me explain why. You've seen the news. I don't have to tell you what the headlines have said, what the social media shows, all these photos of the other college campuses that reopen with great fanfare, all in person. They've had dozens, hundreds, thousands of COVID-19 cases. The campuses have become giant super spreader events. And so many people have wondered in this moment, what is higher education about? What is it for? What, in particular, for the students and their families, are we paying for? You know, when I was a candidate for this role, I did some due diligence, and I found a New York Times article from the 1980s that said Queens College is not a party school. I thought, good, that's fine by me. We rank at the very top in a recent ranking, number four, not in the borough, city, state, but in the nation, number four in the nation for what they call return on investment. I always put that in quote marks because it's such a business term most of us in academia find troubling for what it implies. It's crass and materialistic. But I don't begrudge our students who want to know, when I pay my tuition dollars, what can I expect? And we are at the top of those lists. At the bottom of the list, if you want to play beer pong, what I've been explaining to people is, as you look at what's happening on college campuses, so many, not just me, have wondered, do I want to pay tuition? It's $50,000 per year. And then when you add room and board, you're talking $75,000 per year. 10 times, one order of magnitude greater than what a Queens College education costs. And that's without even taking into account TAP and Pell Grants and so on. And most people have looked at this value proposition and have said, no, I would prefer Queens College. That's why our summer enrollment was up 30%. So I think this is a moment for us as a society to commit again to public goods, to a shared interest. The pandemic has made that more apparent than ever. We have a social contract. When I wear a face mask, it helps me, but it helps you more, and vice versa. I wear a face mask for you, you wear a face mask for me. And this is a moment when divisions have emerged between those who have empathy, who can appreciate the suffering of someone other than themselves, and that the people around us have the same aspirations we do to improve our lives. And those who are narcissistic, self-aggrandizing, who care only about getting ahead for themselves. Well, for the most part, Queens College consists of the former, not the latter. Those who appreciate that not everyone comes from privilege, indeed, most of us don't. And so we're a place for folks who are strivers. And not only is that nothing to be ashamed of, it's something to be proud of. That's why I'm convinced that because there's so much rebuilding to be done after this pandemic, we will be needed more. And people are already seeing that as they look at institutions. We shelter at home, each to ourselves or with our loved ones. And to know that Queens College is still there, strong, with our beautiful campus depicted in CBS This Morning, the leading weekend news show, it just looked glorious. And we were featured so positively. It took, by the way, months to set that up behind the scenes. So this is a moment for us to think, what will Queens College look like in the future? I'm convinced, and I say this as an optimist, not a pessimist, we're not going back to March of 2020. People ask me, when will things go back to the way they were? I don't think they ever will. Time only moves forward. We will bounce, but we'll bounce forward. And this means that we have to think about, well, even once we reopen, oh, by the way, that's the wrong word. We've always been open. We still are open. It's just that we're online. But once we're in person more, there will be those among us who, for compelling reasons, family, jobs, a health vulnerability, because in order to make their lives work, they can't come to campus. Their education has to be asynchronous. I think we have an opportunity to take what we've learned during this moment and re-envision a more modular, more flexible, more adaptable form of higher education that better serves our students and the demands of the marketplace. So that's just a big picture, a philosophical overview. Let me talk about some of the details now. Where are we now? So I'll turn to enrollment. Our freshman enrollment, this is heartening, this is so positive, is up more than 400 individuals. Our transfers are off. And you know, the CUNY community colleges in general, they're down a bit. This is worrying because usually community colleges are what they call counter-cyclical. When the economy's bad, people choose to go to school. So our continuing students are slightly down. We're calling it stable or flat, but if you actually assess the total headcount of students, it's down a couple percent. However, the enrollment in classes is up. So there's always nuance in data, and sometimes people are superficial. Sometimes I'm like that too, like anyone else. And you don't look in enough detail. So what's happening here? It means that people are coming who hadn't been here before, the new freshmen, first-year students. And for those who are continuing, they're taking more classes. So fewer people, but when you look at the number of registrants for the classes, that's up. So each person is maybe adding an additional class. That's also enabled by the online format. In terms of graduate students, it's approximately flat. People ask me, what about the spring? Well, I have to be appropriate in everything that I do. I recognize, and people remind me if I ever forget, that I'm always on. This is being recorded, for example. Anything that I say might be tweeted out within moments. So I can't tell you right now with any certainty what the spring will look like. And I would rather practice what people call radical transparency than hiding. So I'm going to tell you what I can tell you, which is I don't know, all right? And I'll even tell you why I don't know. I don't know because nobody knows. Because when you look at what's happening, the schools that announce this and that, within 3 weeks, they reverse course. Within 1 day, they reverse course. There's federal law, there's state law, there's CUNY Central guidance, all right? And I am a leader, but I answer to other leaders as well. We all have a boss. So it wouldn't be appropriate for me to stand up and announce, oh, this is what we'll be doing in January, right? Because I can't see into the future. And as part of being honest with you, I would rather just be straight up front and say, I cannot promise that the spring will be this or that. I can predict, right? So this is caveats and disclaimers. I'm not making any official announcement. I'm just saying if you were to ask me, what do I expect? What I expect is that the spring will be approximately similar to the fall, right? I'll repeat that because you'll hear the disclaimers. I'm trained as a lawyer, so every time I talk, there's a caveat or a disclaimer. It will be approximately similar. I'm not saying it'll be absolutely the same. And this is subject to change. Right? Everyone's rushing to market with vaccines, although thankfully the major pharmaceuticals have announced they won't skip the trials and tests, and you've probably seen the news. Some of the ones they rushed had bad effects. People, it didn't work. You know, people suffered. So I'm eager for a vaccine. You know, I'll tell you the truth. I yearn to be on our campus. I'm one of those people who talks to strangers. I like to do that. And I want to meet you and to, well, at least do the elbow bump. You know, we probably won't go back to shaking hands anytime soon. And I understand when our new students, they want to socialize. That's not bad behavior. That's normal behavior. When I was young, for those of you who are still young or young at heart, of course you want to meet new people. But for this moment, we have to be disciplined because everything we do, especially in group, just raises the risk. So again, for the future, what will the spring look like? I would predict, I'm anticipating, approximately similar to the fall. I will promise you that I will keep you informed. I will share with you everything that I can share with you as clearly as I possibly can. I sometimes go into meetings with other people talking about planning, and we all leave the meeting or the Zoom, and then you talk afterward or you put something in the chat box and say, boy, that was about as clear as mud, you know? And sometimes that's just how it is. So that's where we are with enrollment. Let me now talk about reopening. And I've already said that's the wrong word. I want to thank David Gerwin, the head of our staff for the PSC, who pointed that out in one of the meetings that we had. He's been involved in all the meetings since I've been president. And I want to thank everyone who's been part of that. It's chaired by Megan Moore-Wilk. She's the chief of staff in my office. And she is just a hero to me. She's just done so much working with a working group. So it's not just Megan, it's not just me. We have Simone, for example, for the Senate. We have students. We have PSC, DC 37, all at the table, or the virtual table, the Zoom boxes, every week to look at the plans. For those who don't know, they've been approved. They're on the website. You can take a look. And we're still revising. See, that's the other thing. Everything is dynamic. These are all what they call living documents, right? Because now we have to think about phase two, phase three, phase four. We have to think about things we hadn't thought about. We have to think about athletics. Now, we've already thought about what has to happen if we need to close down and so on. But the plan has to adapt as we look at flu season and so on. Many of you have come to the briefings. We've held two of them. We will have another one tonight. So if you'd like to come, 6 p.m., we'll go over everything, answer all the questions to the best of our capability. But for those of you who haven't come, I can sum it up very simply. We are 99% online. What I mean by that is if you added up all the classes, 99% of them are being offered in this format or Google Meets or something similar to that. About 1% of what we're doing is in person. And let me explain that 1%. It's all pre-approved. It's been vetted for necessity and safety. So some people have said to me, well, why can't I just come?
When she's done, I'm outside.
Oh,
thank you.
Someone just stepped outside. So if you're not speaking, well, I hope you're okay outside. All right. I want to answer a question, can't you? All right. It's a question I would ask if I were you. People have said to me, why can't I just come? I'm a responsible adult. Just let me onto campus. Well, the answer is, first of all, we're not allowed to do that. All right. We have to comply with state law and state policy. You know about this, right? If you travel outside of New York, if you go to one of those states and then you come back, it's a 2-week self-quarantine, and they check on you by calling, and the mayor has said if you break the rules, you'll be fined $10,000, right? So people can't just come and go as they please. Everyone who shows up, you know what? That increases the risk, and it increases the work. Somebody's got to turn the lights on, turn the lights off, clean the bathroom. Someone's got to do everything after each and every person shows up. I want to thank those essential employees, B&G, safety, IT, who just so many of them have come in, day out. And they haven't had the luxury of sheltering at home. So we have to be mindful of the rules and of that social contract, that everything we do, it doesn't just increase the risks, it imposes costs. And sometimes we ourselves don't have to bear those costs, right? Someone else will bear those costs. I was reading, for example, about Sturgis, you know, the big biker gathering in South Dakota, and I should reveal I'm a motorcyclist myself. Well, there are hundreds of cases now of COVID around the country. Just the motorcyclists who went there then traveled back, and many of them, most of them apparently didn't wear masks, and they created costs. Some of them won't themselves bear the cost, right? Some people who get sick or who have the virus, they don't get sick, they're asymptomatic, but they give it to other people. So that's an example of what economists call externalities. You shift the cost off you onto someone else. As your president, as a steward of our community, I have to be mindful of this. So even if you don't notice the cost, Megan and the staff and I, we have to think about, well, if we have that many people rushing onto campus, we then need to clean up after them. And what does that mean? And is it worth it ultimately? So that's why we don't allow more access. So that's reopening, or to be clear, we've always been open. We're just online. So it's not really a reopening. We don't want to imply that we're all going to go rushing it. I will repeat to you what Phalo, your former president, my predecessor, and now my boss, said to me. He said, you should be thinking, have as few people on campus as possible in the fall, right? So we want to have as few people on campus as possible for the time being. This is not permanent. This will not last forever, but we just have to do this so we don't have another outbreak. Just look at those campuses. And when I look at them, I don't gloat. I just think I'm so relieved that under Phalo's leadership and with our discipline, that the whole CUNY system decided we are not going to be like that. And you know what I'm talking about. Just take a look. Yeah, we would all be sorry if we just opened the doors and just all gone rushing in, because you could reasonably predict we'd have 1,000 cases, you know. And as a primarily commuter campus, that means you'd be bringing it home to your parents and grandparents and who knows. I was talking to a city council member just this morning before this meeting. He had COVID, his wife had COVID, and their son had COVID. The three of them made it, but five people in their synagogue didn't. Five passed away. That's scary. It's real. And we all know people like that, our cousins or friends of friends, you know, it that can be avoided. Let me turn now to the budget. And here's something I'm not going to say. Every time I hear someone say this, I just cringe and roll my eyes. It's all I can do to not roll my eyes. You've heard a phrase, right? People are always saying, people in roles like mine, they say, we need to learn to do more with less, right? Yeah, I'm not going to say that because, well, there's some ways you could describe that using some language that college presidents shouldn't use. But that's the kind of phrase that people who have no heart say to others when they talk about, let's all tighten our belts, and they're not talking about themselves. So you won't hear me say that. What you will hear me say is this. We need federal money. Okay? That's not just me saying it. I'm paraphrasing the governor of New York. Okay? Now, in my role, I'm not supposed to, and I won't, say anything that's partisan. So I don't say anything about vote for this person or this party or that party. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying if there is federal stimulus money coming, it will be bad. If there's no federal stimulus money that shows up sometime, it will be disastrous, right? I'm just going to be straight with you. Right? I'm not sharing with you any secret. You can Google this. The state of New York revenues are down 20%, give or take, you know, at least. All right. Most of our funding comes from the state of New York. We do receive some funding. The CUNY system as a whole receives more from the city. But despite our name, we are primarily funded by a combination of state of New York monies and tuition and fees. So that's where the funding primarily comes from. And the state is down significantly. Not just, you know, that's not the right word. It's down in a way you can't even begin to imagine how much the state is down. People have said to me, well, what about the CARES Act money? So we received about $16 million. Half of that, about $8 million, went straight to students. It just passed right through us. The remainder will barely cover what we need to cover. Right? Again, I prefer candor to sugarcoating things. So I'm just telling you how it is. There are strict limits on how that money can be spent. Phalo is chancellor, I is president. We can't just say, oh, let's spend it on this or that, even if it's a good project. So I'm not talking about me going out and buying a car with it. I'm talking about someone comes along and says, look, this is a compelling, important piece of scientific research. This is a class that we have to teach. Well, there are very strict limits based on the legislation on what the CARES money can be spent on. And there's a whole process for how it's allocated. So that's where we are on the budget. We don't actually have an approved budget, right? So when people say to me, well, what's the budget? I don't know, all right? And again, I'm not sharing with you anything indiscreet. That's just the answer. The budget is not yet finalized. We're receiving an amount every month that we use to be able to pay the bills. And I'm just learning myself. So, boy, this is a vast, complex enterprise. We have not just the tax levy part, but we have non-tax levy. So we have various associated nonprofit entities. We have a research foundation. We have many other parts to what's called Queens College that are legally separate. I'll give you an example. You might have seen a show at Kupferberg, right? Well, our cultural programming, for the most part, almost all, probably all, is financially distinct from Queens College as a whole. It's not the same budget. The same, by the way, is true, the same, that it's not the same, of our capital budget. Sometimes people get these confused, and before I started in the work that I'm doing, I didn't quite understand myself. No reason you would unless you got an MBA or were into finance. We have an operating budget and a capital budget. So sometimes people have said to me, wait a minute, I see construction started up again. Why are you building these buildings? Why don't you take all that money and give it to students or give it to someone else? And the answer is, I can't. I am not legally allowed because those monies are part of a totally different budget that has been earmarked, meaning the people who gave us that money said, it is to do these things. It is to build something very specific. And even if I went and built something else that was useful, I could show it was useful, that wouldn't be appropriate. I'd get in a heap of trouble for doing that. So the capital budget that's been allocated, so when you see there are some construction projects that are underway, that's a different pot of money that goes to support that. I'll be done in just a moment, and I'll take some questions because I know you have many questions that you want to ask, and you have a whole business meeting that you need to turn to. In the time since I've started, you likely know, it was July 1st, my first day, so it's only been a few months in the COVID era. I can tell you, it seems like an eternity. Doesn't it seem like an eternity that we've had this pandemic? We can only barely remember the outlines of our lives before March of 2020, no matter what your age or what your circumstances, that look back on that with nostalgia, even though it's the same calendar year. So I've been meeting with folks, the Queens College Foundation, which set up the Critical Needs Fund, to which they've donated just shy of $800,000 to help our students. I've been meeting public officials. So as I mentioned this morning, I met a city council member that was my third or fourth city council member. It's important to pay respects and thank them for everything they've been doing. Members of Congress, members of the state Senate, state assembly, borough officials. I've been meeting faculty. I have a goal I'll share with you. I want to meet every single faculty member, regardless of rank or status. This will take, according to my office, about 8 years. Because what we're doing now, if we were in person, we'd have breakfast, you know, bagels and donuts, that sort of thing. But it's virtual right now, and I'm learning about their research, their teaching. It's just fantastic to talk to folks. It's talented art faculty such as Chloe Bass, who's just in the New York Times. It was great to have an opportunity to talk about her multimedia work. People who are scientists who study dopamine, for example. I have a meeting coming up with someone who's doing research in that area. I've talked to biologists, I've talked to computer scientists, I've talked to comparative lit faculty, you name it. I'm also meeting staff. We're setting those up as well. And Betsy, our provost, she and I are a real team. We're going to start meeting departments. Oh, in case people were wondering, when will you be invited? With the faculty, we're going in alphabetical order. So if your last name starts with an A or a B, I'll be seeing you soon. If it starts with a Y or a Z, I'll see you in about 7 or 8 years. With the departments, we'll go in reverse alphabetical order to offset that. I've been meeting with students. We just did an international student town hall. And welcome your ideas. I really want to see as much as possible students. So that's what we're all about. And if we were in person, you'd see me walking around. That's, you know, I'm not going to be Phalo. He's much more charming. But he and I have something in common, which is I understand he used to walk all around campus. People would see him. That's actually something that I do. And I would love to be doing right now. It's just that we can't. I need to be disciplined myself and model good behavior. So we're going to try to set up virtual opportunities to do the same thing, even though I'm seated here on this couch and people see me with the exact same backdrop as we all have a favorite Zoom spot in the house. I'm trying to see students especially. So when we did the welcome day, we had 1,100 students, which was fantastic. And they were so active in the chat box because everyone was trying to make friends. That's what you want to do on the first day of college, right? And we want to create through this format an opportunity for them to mingle. I've been meeting our colleagues throughout CUNY. So the provost and I, for example, we're meeting with our counterparts at LaGuardia Community College. We're meeting with our counterparts at Queensborough Community College, at York College, at the law school, to talk about how we can collaborate. We're studying all sorts of ideas. And we're doing outreach to the press and just trying to make sure that everyone gets the message about Queens College and what we are doing even during COVID times. I want to give a shout out also to the PR department. The QView looks great, what they're able to publicize. For example, that we hired Regina Bain to head the Louis Armstrong House, which will have its gala next week. We hired Deirdre Flowers as the interim Africana Studies Chair. We have two Provost Diversity Fellows. If you're not reading the QView, I encourage you to start reading the QView. I don't personally write it. I always enjoy reading it. I always learn something from it. And the PR department is doing so much to advance our good name. I already mentioned CBS this morning. If you haven't seen it, take a look at it online. You can watch it. It's about an 8-minute segment. It has Zaire Coulat, the Student Association president, walking on campus with a CBS anchor, talking about how great the education is. And, you know, to have seen us portrayed that way. They had two other schools, but it was clear that Queens College was the school that this national news program that they really wanted to highlight. And they portrayed us in the most positive light. We couldn't have paid for advertising that was better. And the amount that has to be done behind the scenes to get that set up is just amazing. Let me conclude. We're going to start strategic planning. Right after Labor Day, this will be an inclusive process. We'll get the Senate involved. I'm just now talking to the consultant about how to ensure that we have everyone taking part. There'll be 5 areas that we emphasize. Those are, 1, diversity. That's really, if you ask me, what we're all about. It's what I'm all about. And I know, too, that there's diversity within diversity, that for some people, when you talk about that narrative of newcomers to these shores, it isn't compelling for them because their ancestors may have come in bondage. They are not descended of voluntary migrants. Or they're part of the Great Migration. Maybe their grandparents or great-grandparents were part of that historic move of African-Americans from the Deep South and Jim Crow racial segregation to freedom and opportunity in New York City about a century ago. Many of you have studied that and know well. But regardless of where you're from, and that's so important to me, that It doesn't matter. You could be part of the strong Orthodox Jewish neighborhood surrounding Queens College. You could be one of the newcomers from mainland China. You could be from a longstanding Italian-American family. You could have come, or your parents, from Haiti in the 80s. You're welcome at Queens College. When we did the town hall last night, we made sure that we invited dreamers. And we said to them, you know, you don't have to show your name. You don't have to turn your camera on, because we understand people are sensitive. And we care about you, and we'll protect you. But we know not everyone will. And so this is such a challenging environment we're in, because even as some of us try to build bridges, others want to build walls. That's why number one is diversity. Number two is to take a look at the curriculum, the substance of what we're providing to students. Number three, fiscal sustainability. Number four, the research that our talented faculty do and their creative endeavors. It's just great as a liberal arts institution to be able to bring together people in all these disciplines. And so many of our faculty work in more than one discipline. We have people in the education department who think about both how to teach, that's pedagogy, and about a specific subject, math or science. And so they're blending two things. We have people working on electronic art. We have scientists who actually have written about the Marvel Universe. That's right, about comic books. They've analyzed the fact and fiction of what we see in superhero movies. Fifth is student success and student life. So again, strategic planning will include diversity, the curriculum, fiscal sustainability, research and creative endeavors, and student success and student life. I'm going to close just by anticipating there might be a question or two about the summit. That's where we still have some people, and that's good. We want to provide housing. The summit was built to ensure that for our students, we offered a subsidized option. It regularly has about 510 beds. We've reduced that to 50%, okay? But because rooms are configured differently, when you reduce the summit's 510 in half, you don't end up actually with half of 510. You end up with something less, something more than that. Our current maximum capacity is about 377. However, right now, there are only about 50 or 60 people residing in the summit. I say people very deliberately. They're not all Queens College students. There are residents. It's mostly Queens College students, but you may know we accepted students from throughout the community system. At the peak, I would think there'll only be about 150, 160 is what we're projecting. So let me say that again. Even though the summit typically holds as many as 510, we're down to just a little more than one-tenth of that, and I expect that in the fall, it'll hit maybe 150, 160 in that range. By the way, we've been generous, and this is not a secret, this is open. We've been generous and liberal, allowing people to cancel and receive refunds. So I know there are a lot of concerns. I'll also say a few things. We will enforce COVID safety norms. Now, we want to do this gently with a teaching moment, but if people are persistent in noncompliance, and that includes me, all right? If you're on our campus, whether you're in the summit or elsewhere, you need to have that face mask on. If you're around other people or might be, you need to maintain the 6 feet and engage in the sort of behavior that's respectful of the health of other people. If that doesn't happen, we will take appropriate actions. We've seen there are some institutions that, well, they've been quite draconian. We want to do this in a way that is effective, but I don't want in advance just to go around scolding people, because that isn't right and it doesn't work anyway. Here, I want to give a shout out to AVP Jennifer Jarvis. She oversees the summit, reports directly to me on the summit. And boy, she works tirelessly to help students in need. Some people have asked, are we evicting people? Are we rendering people homeless? Let me be unequivocal about this. We have not evicted anybody. We haven't rendered anyone homeless. People have said, well, what about the RAs? We typically have 11. We're down to 6. But let me be absolutely clear. We have not evicted RAs from the summit. I spent some of my time just addressing the rumors that circulate on social media. And I know that's just part of the job, because the world that we live in, once someone says something, it just goes all over the place, whether it's true or not. And we will do our best. And I really want to thank Jen. Boy, she does so much and is one of those unsung heroes, helping our students day in, day out, whether other people know it or not. That's why I want to lift up that example of what she's done. Some of you know Jen, and you know just how her heart goes out to folks. The summit, by the way, you may know, is actually not technically part of Queens College. It's operated by an independent nonprofit associated with us, and CUNY has retained a third-party management company to actually do the day-to-day, so the staff there are part of a third-party contractor. Well, I've spoken for more than half an hour. Thank you for your indulgence. I want to be sure to take questions. You can put them in the chat. I'm going to close exactly where I started, by thanking Simone, thanking the Senate, saying that I look forward to working with you. We're starting in such a strange time, but the fall has always been my favorite part of the year. For anyone who works in academia, who's chosen to make a career in academia, I think you look forward to the fall. That's really the beginning of a new year. And that's what this is for you, for me, for us. It's the beginning of a new year that's different from any year that any of us have experienced or could possibly imagine. But by working together, and only by working together, we will make it through this pandemic, we will emerge stronger, and Queens College will lead the way. Public higher education has been and always will be the engine of the American dream, and the borough of Queens needs us, needs you and me, all of us, more than it has ever. Thank you so much. I look forward to seeing you in person. We'll go for a walk on campus. Simone, back to you. I'm happy to take questions, whether it's from the floor or in the chat.
Thank you. What I was going to say, is it okay if I share your link tonight? Because then I will say if there are any questions about
absolutely. Yes, please. Please.
That in the chat.
Yes, it's 6 p.m. And don't worry, you won't hear me talking. That's primarily Megan Morwell, Chief of Staff.
I just posted the link to the chat. So if it's about access to campus, you can save those questions for later this evening. If you have any other pressing questions, we can take one or two for the sake of getting through the balance of the agenda.
Yes, and thank you, Simone, for granting me so much time. I want to thank Cheryl McCarthy, who I see, who had me on her TV show. If you haven't seen her show on CUNY TV, you can check it out. It's also available online. It was just a delight to have talked to her.
Likewise.
Thank you.
Right. I don't think that a password is needed.
For tonight? No, there's no password. Please do go ahead and join. I'm happy to take any question. And I promise, so some of you know, I was a law professor before. You know, law professors have a bad habit. When students ask a question, they say, "That's a very good question. What do you think?" I promise not to do that to you. So if you ask me a question, I'll do my level best to give you an answer. If I know, and if I don't know, we'll find the answer for you.
I think, may I speak?
Yes, please.
I think the president
I'm not sure who's speaking.
Oh, Professor
Hi. Oh, it was a delight to have visited your class. Thank you. For those of you who don't know, former council member Vaca has done so much. He's been so involved with our food pantry program. He's a longtime adjunct. His students just love him. And I hope that this doesn't overburden you, but he spent so much time, even on virtual format, doing individual office hours for dozens of students. He spent literally hundreds of hours counseling students, not just on their classwork, but on their careers. You are exemplary. I wish we had 10 more of you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. President. And I wanted to say that Your summary of the fiscal conditions of the city and state are on spot.
Thank you.
I do compare this for my students in context. You know, President Ford was said to have said something of the equivalent to New York to drop dead, which he did not say, but he was paraphrased, or he was, you know, in summary. But that was back in the 1970s, early 70s. The situation is much more serious today than, believe it or not, it was in the 70s, when the city almost was at bankruptcy, at the door of bankruptcy. First of all, the city had used capital money for expense budget obligations, which you said right before that you cannot do. The city did that until they were caught and they balanced their books improperly. But the city had the state of New York in a very strong economic situation. The city was not, but the state was. And Governor Carey at the time got the city on its feet after significant layoffs. And finally, we got back on our feet. This situation is so different, as the president said, because we have the city in deficit significantly, and we have the state in a more significant fiscal condition. We're talking of a deficit of $10 billion, if not more. So we're here to work with you, and we're here to work together, all of us. We're concerned, and we want to do what's right, and but we do know that there could be difficult times ahead, and boy, do we need a federal bailout. And I thank you for, you know, saying that, because that is the case. In all fairness, New York needs help at this point.
And I'll bet, not to put words in your mouth, but I'll bet, Jimmy, the most important thing that all of us can do in a couple months is what? At the polling place?
Vote.
That's right. That's right. That's
and
right.
And students must still have time to register. And there's no excuse not to vote. You can vote by absentee without excuse. You do not need an absentee excuse anymore. Or you can vote early, or you can vote on election day. So there's no excuse not to vote.
Perfect. And we can together advocate for Queens College. My voice is not enough. And even though I think I give a good speech from time to time, you know who's really compelling? It's not me. It's all of you. It's constituents of the assembly members and senators who... they care about you. They've known your families. You need to talk to folks about how important Queens College is, how important CUNY is, how higher education has helped. We're in this together. I know people say that about the pandemic, but boy, it really is true. And we think about how to get folks to see the value. It's not charity, because when you invest in Queens College, you're helping people who are entrepreneurs. You're helping ensure that the economy remains strong. So if every one of you in the Senate is a leader in your own right, just talk to whatever elected official you know. It doesn't matter what office they hold, what party they're in, but just put in a good word, because together we can be advocates for the value of what Queens College offers. And if you have concerns, I know that we have so many offices that are available to help you, the QC hub for students, and we want to make sure that every faculty member, every staff person, every student knows where to turn. All these offices remain open virtually. So I know sometimes you have to wait a little bit to get through, but keep trying, and they'll do their best to make sure that we keep going. I think we have time for one other question.
Alexander?
Yes, hi. So first of all, I wanna thank you, President Wu, for—
Oh, thank you. You were on CBS. You look different. I don't recognize you. You were wearing a mask, and thank you.
Right, exactly. And for all the faculty who don't know, as I spoke to CBS about, you know, concerns that college students face about you know, the fall semester, and President Wu actually reached out to me directly, which I think speaks volumes about your leadership and your transparency. So thank you very much for that. My question is, first of all, I'll preface it by saying I do know you can't disclose too much about the budget, and I understand that there's a lot of unknowns, But I would like to ask if there's been any concrete steps or measures taken to address tuition reduction for students, given that the fall semester is almost entirely online.
Right, so we've held the tuition steady. In the spring, there was a partial refund, you likely are aware of, some fees. And we've taken a look at what the fees support. We've actually consulted with student leaders. The student fees, especially, I want to highlight, go to support the staff who help students. And so much of what is happening, whether it's there or in IT, what the tuition and fees support is still running. In fact, it's running overtime. What IT has to do to keep Zoom up and Blackboard up. So those decisions are made by the CUNY system. You probably know there is a central office, and the president before me, Phalo, went on from this job to be the chancellor of the system, and he answers to a board of trustees, the CUNY board of trustees. They set the tuition. I don't do it. Queens College doesn't do it. And they've taken a look at all these issues, and they have heard from so many people, from legislators, from students who are concerned, as I am. So I want to ensure that it's not just rhetoric, that our tuition and fees remain as low as they possibly can be while still ensuring that the lights are on, that we're able to recruit and retain the best and a diverse range of faculty and staff. And to me, the best and diverse are the same. They're not different. They're not just compatible. They're united. And so the answer to your question is the Board of Trustees considers those issues. You have had and will have through the open meetings rules an opportunity to offer input to the Board of Trustees. So thank you. And thank you again. I appreciate what you said on CBS this morning, and I'm glad we had a chance to talk after the show was on. So again, if you haven't seen that, take a look, and you'll see the two of us and the president of the Student Association, as well as a biology professor who's doing actually some work that's related to disease. So there were four of us from Queens College on that show in just 8 minutes. I think there's a question from Christine Rosales.
Yeah, one last question, Christine.
Thank you. Understanding that we're in a fiscal crisis, about approximately, and you might not know the answer off the top of your head, but about how much of our budget is based externally from external sources like the city and the state?
So the budget, the revenue is primarily from the state and from tuition and fees. The tuition and fees that the students pay get sent up to Albany, where it's bundled and then distributed back. So I might be misunderstanding your question. The amount that comes into our coffers from sources other than the state, the city, and tuition is low. It's not zero. I'll give you an example. We rent space. Now that's become difficult because of pandemic, but some of you may have seen TV shows and movie crews filming on our campus. We make a little bit of money from that sort of thing. We make a little bit of money from cell phone towers. We make a little bit of money from vending machines. When I say a little, that's it's inconsequential amounts. And we do have generous donors.
What I meant to say is, after our tuition, how much does the state and city kick in, kind of thing?
I see. You're asking what's the split between tuition and fees on the one hand and the city and state on the other hand. That's the question. You're right. I don't know the answer to that just off the top of my head. I don't want to misspeak. I try to be careful. You know, it's important to me to be as candid and honest as I can be, and also to recognize sometimes the things I can't talk about. Now, let me just pause for a moment on that. You know, sometimes people say to me, well, why can't you tell us about such and such student or professor or the staff person? And the answer is there are federal privacy laws. For students, there's something called FERPA. If you don't know that, that protects your privacy rights, even against your own parents, if we know something and your parents come along. There's also HIPAA, that's healthcare privacy. Whenever you go to the doctor now, you fill out all those forms. So we have been with COVID, for example, if there's a case, we let everyone know who could be exposed without in any way disclosing the name of the person or anything like that. For everyone who's an employee, so that's faculty, staff, it's also the RAs and the Summit, even though they're employed by a third party named Capstone, we can't talk about specific details. That just wouldn't be right. So I appreciate your question, and I appreciate your anticipating that. I wouldn't know exactly the answer. I'm trying to model both transparency, but also behaving appropriately for my role. Whenever I talk about things such as people in the Summit not being removed, I can tell you that no one has been removed. But then if you were to ask me, well, tell me about this specific person, I would have to say, I'm sorry, I just can't. But thank you for the question. I will take a look, because that question, actually, it's public record. We could find it and figure out. And if perhaps someone from the administration who does finances is on the Zoom, I understand your question to be, what's the approximate split between public appropriations on the one hand and tuition dollars on the other hand? So we'll see if we can get that for you. But together, those two are overwhelmingly what we have. The amount that we make from auxiliary operations is a tiny amount. The last thing I'll say is increasing the amount that the state gives us, or not having it decreased further, is something that we are united on. And if we can do that, when people say to me, can you reduce tuition? As I said, that's a CUNY decision by the board. But I can tell you the number one thing that would allow the board to do that, and it's if the state or the city stepped in and funded CUNY as really a civic institution that is a major employer and that in every respect, not just as a college, but is vital to New York and to its renaissance. Thank you, Simone, once again. And thank you for allotting me so much time. I will turn the meeting back to you. I look forward to joining you in the future whenever you invite me. Thank you so much.
I'd like to open back up with number three with any more announcements.
Yeah, I have an announcement. Hi, everyone. My name is Simone. I'm the Deputy Chair for the Academic Senate. I'll keep my announcements brief. I have two. The first is a Senate-related announcement. So there are currently open opportunities to nominate yourself or another colleague for seats on the Auxiliary Enterprises Corporation or the College Association. I would respectfully like to ask faculty if you would consider applying via the nominating committee application or nominating one of your colleagues. The second announcement is on behalf of the Knight News. As you may or may not know, I'm the editor-in-chief for the Knight News, which is QC's student-run newspaper. We publish on a monthly basis, and we work tirelessly to keep the QC community informed. So if any faculty would like to submit pieces, op-eds, or a letter to the editor from your department and get involved with college journalism, please do so. I'll paste the email in the chat. Thanks.
Thank you, Sid. And what I'm going to do is, I'm going to actually call on Annie to make her announcement, unless you do not have audio.
Do you?
Please, Annie.
Okay, great. So the Queens College Library is sponsoring a three-part online digital series this fall with three topics, one in September, one in October, and one in November. and hopefully they will build on each other, but they all explore issues of social and racial justice in higher education in various ways. And many of the folks involved in the Senate today will be speakers on these panels, including Sid, who's gonna be speaking in the October panel, and our president, who's gonna be moderating the first panel in September, which is on Black Lives Matter. So I posted the link in the chat and hope that people will log on. It's free and open to the public. And we're co-sponsoring this with the Queens Public Library, the Queens College SEEK program, CERU, as well as the Black and Latinx Faculty and Staff Association. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Annie. And I would also like to just make the announcement that the food pantry, if everyone has seen the message that was sent out today, the food pantry is open to all CUNY students between the hours Monday through Thursday, noon to 4 by appointment, if you can forward that information to those who may need it. Any other announcements? Okay, thank you. Seeing none, I'd like to move to item number 4. Sid,
yep,
would you like to pull up the, or do you have access?
I have it, yeah. I should be able to screen share if it works. Yep, there we go. Okay, so, hi everyone, you obviously all know me, I'm the deputy chair. So what you see here is a resolution of appreciation for Cheryl McCarthy. If you don't know who that is, she was a professor at Queens College for 13 years, a distinguished professor in journalism, and she used to be the advisor for the Knight News, and she was a full-time faculty member. And you know, she retired recently this spring, and the staff of the Knight News wanted to do something to commemorate all her service and accomplishments at the paper. So, you know, I just wanted to thank Professor McCarthy, who's on call today. You really inspired everybody at the paper to keep striving onwards and upwards. You filled our newsroom with both ambition after your monthly critiques rolled around and everybody saw how you liked their articles. And you also filled, you know, all our faces with smiles when, you know, you would make the occasional joke here and there. So with that being said, thank you for all your service. I move to adopt the resolution of appreciation for Cheryl McCarthy, and I ask for unanimous consent.
I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 I don't think I have the need to ask for oppositions or abstentions,
yes,
but I'll do it officially.
Yes, is any objection?
Any objections, yes.
Now you got it.
Abstentions. Okay, thank you, Cheryl. We appreciate you so much, and you will definitely be missed. We hope you enjoy the next venture of your life. Thank you.
Thank you so much, and I really appreciate your statement. It's lovely to know that one's work is appreciated and that maybe it's made a difference for some people.
Yeah.
I enjoyed working with some very hardworking and talented people, both in my classes and on the Knight News, and I know that under Sid, the Knight News is going to continue to give Queens College students an opportunity to practice good journalism.
Perfectly. Thank you so much. Thank you. Moving on to agenda item number 5, committee reports. Starting with the Undergraduate Curriculum Committee, minutes dated May 7th. I will pull them up on my screen. Here. And that's number 27. Okay, I think Ken?
Yes, good afternoon, everybody. I'd like to move the minutes of the Undergraduate Curriculum Committee from May 7th, 2020, and ask for unanimous consent.
Ask if there's an objection.
Is there any objection? Okay, seeing none?
Adopted. So,
thank you. I do not recall, I'm sorry, I don't have the name. I know Glenn Berger is no longer the chair of the GCC, the Graduate Curriculum Committee. I don't know if there's a representative for the report dated May 6th. Brenda, do we know if there's, who was supposed to be the rep?
Hello,
I'm Mihaela Robila.
Yes, hello, thank you.
Yes, and I'm the assistant to the provost for the graduate studies. I'd like to move the minutes of the GCC and ask for unanimous consent, the minutes from May 6, 2020.
Thank you. Any oppositions? Seeing none, so moved. Thank you, approved.
Thank you.
Item number C, the nominating committee report. Professor Pei Shi Wang was here, but she had to leave and asked if we can present the nominating committee report. Let me pull that up. The nominating committee report dated September 10th, asking for unanimous consent. Any objections?
No.
Seeing none, so moved. Thank you. Okay, and now I'm going to stop share. So moving on to item number six, old business 6A. The nominations committee has two open faculty seats and one student seat. And I would like to open the floor for nominations to the nominations committee. One faculty member from the Division of Social Sciences and one faculty member from the Division of Arts and Humanities, which runs through 2022. Are there any, I'm opening the floor for nominations. Self-nominations will be accepted as well. Okay, I will be hounding you at another time. So moving forward with a seat for one student seat on the nominations committee, Division of Education, the School of Education through 2021. This is a student seat. Any nominations? Okay, perfect, thank you. We will open this up again. Moving forward to agenda item number seven, under new business, we have a UFS petition. Stephen Harris was eliminated, but I'm opening the floor for a nomination to the UFS. And I believe you could self-nominate or Marco, you're up.
Yeah, I'd like to nominate Elizabeth Ijalva.
Any other nominations? Okay, thank you. All in favor? This is a position for the University Faculty Senate faculty representative for CUNY UFS.
Only faculty vote.
Only faculty can vote for this particular seat.
Aye.
So faculty, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Any objections? Abstentions. Okay, thank you. So moved. Elizabeth, thank you for serving. And just a quick note is that there are still three remaining open seats on the UFS. They have been meeting virtually as well. So if you can encourage your colleagues or if someone here is interested, we would really like to have the full representation. I believe the representation, Queens College has 10 seats, 9 full-time faculty and 1 adjunct faculty. And after tonight, after today's election, we still have 3 remaining seats, 1 open and 2 that just completed this term. So please consider or notify a colleague. With that being the case, I move that the meeting be adjourned.
Second.
Thank you. So thank you. Meeting adjourned. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, President Wu. And thank I look you. Forward to meeting you again soon. Enjoy. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good day,
bye,
everybody.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. Bye, everybody.
Bye. Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.